Paul Hawksby, Andy Jacobs here on TalkSport. Paul Armstrong worked as an editor on Match of the Day and a number of other fine shows on the BBC, and he's written Why Are We Always On Last? A collection of fine war stories from his time at the corporation. Good afternoon, Paul. Good to see
you. Hi, chaps. How are you?
It's a great title.
And, yeah, brilliant title.
Already, I think some people, we said we got the former editor of Match of the Day coming on, and we said, have you got any questions for us? And they'd not heard me say what the title was. And they said, yeah, ask him why we're always on last.
Exactly.
I mean, you must get sick of it.
Well, that was why I preempted it by putting it as, making it the title, to be honest. By about October every year, you'd usually heard from about 15 sets of fans saying we're always on last. So, which can't actually be mathematically true. So we used to kind of keep a tally of it. The other five think you've got it in for them and love their rivals. You know, that's the United fans who think you love Liverpool and vice versa. But the 15 teams who think they're always on last always let you know that. And it's mostly great. I mean, it's like it just shows they care and that they're following. But it's the classic thing that we changed it from a roundup in 2004 where you would have two teams. So two games shown in full or length, and then you have a roundup. Mm. And we thought, well, everybody will love this. We'll put commentary on every game. We'll have 5 or 6 minutes every game. We'll be heroes. The people will be chaired around, you know, television centre. And not, it just changed immediately from we're always in the roundup to we're always on the last.
It's an interesting thing, though, but with so much live football, and yet Match of the Day, it's still an institution. It's still, I don't know about anybody else, but I know me, come August, and we haven't had any football, and you hear that theme tune, you sit down Saturday night, you know you're in for 9 months of it. There's something about it. It's like the rhythm of your life, almost.
Well, it's amazing that when Sky got the deal in 1992 and BBC got highlights, I remember us all thinking, this might not last very long. We're lucky to get this for a little while, but we had it for 3 years, and we genuinely, you would never believe it'd still be there in 2019. But actually, I think that thing about the live matches, you can't watch them all. I mean, we all watch our team and maybe a big game every now and then, but you're not going to watch five in a weekend, and it is that sort of one-stop shop, really. It just works and defies kind of what happens with highlights in general, which is then they have diminished in terms of audiences. In fact, TV in general, really, if you look at the soap operas, but Match of the Day has actually kept that same audience, which is fantastic, really.
You mentioned having it for 3 years, and then it went to ITV, didn't it?
You're right about that.
It was a disaster, wasn't it?
Well, from your point, I mean, not necessarily
a disaster for the viewers.
It was Match of Day was probably never more popular than when it wasn't actually there for three years, it was just not suited to a commercial environment. It just, you know, they actually did a perfectly competent production job. There was nothing in their Des line, and there wasn't much difference, but it just didn't have as much football in it because you have to accommodate adverts. And they had to go big club heavy, as you know, understandably, because that will get you the advertising revenues. And they were putting the big game on last as well, which, again, you can understand. They put, that's the famous Spurs 3, Man United 5.
Yeah.
You had to wait 40 minutes or 50 minutes for that.
And fans hate that. They hate it.
They're used to the opposite. And, I mean, obviously, they complain when their team's on last, but they would expect a 5-3 at White Hart Lane, 3-0 at half-time.
But if you're a 0-0 or you're in a big, say you're a sit and you've beaten Huddersfield 5-0 or something, you can't expect to be on first, can you? Because, you know, those games, it's editorial, isn't it? I'm
sure
people understand that?
It is subjective. You know, you could look at any running order. I mean, I try and second-guess it now, and I usually pretty broadly agree. You're obviously going to go City, Liverpool, Spurs if they're playing on a Saturday first at the moment, more or less every time. Earlier in the season, you can be completely flexible. The promoted team wins early on, you'll probably put that right up the running order. People, I guess it's just that they cared. I mean, I'm a Middlesbrough fan, and I got it in the neck. Well, the whole time we were mid-table in the Premier League, which I kept saying, be careful what you wish for here, because this is as good as it's going to get. But if we draw 1-1 with Stoke, and we're 10th and they're 11th, it's not that thrilling to the national audience. Interesting to me, and I'm kind of watching it on a monitor.
Yeah.
You know, but for the nation, you've got to be sensible and think, well, this isn't a priority game, you know?
Imagine there's always done that thing where if there is a great game, there's two semis off and it's 5-4 in a match, say, between Burnley and Southampton, they will put it first. They will still do that.
Oh, yeah.
And I always love those commentators maybe doing their second ever Match of the Day. There they are. They're on first. I mean, Motti's here every Monday and Friday, and John will tell you, you know, Hereford beating Newcastle was the best thing ever happened to his career.
I was about to bring that up. You just if you can cope with something like that, it's just he was meant to be on for a couple of minutes at the end of the show, wasn't he? And then obviously it all turned around. But yes, these days, I mean, I remember doing, for example, like Portsmouth 7, Reading 4, which again was a game you didn't. I can't remember who was commentating. I don't want to offend whoever it was, but you probably didn't send the frontline commentators to it. But it ends up being the main game in the programme. Middlesbrough again, I remember us going 2-0 up at Reading when Reading's first ever game in the Premier League, and I was doing the show, and I thought, well, that's down the running order, because that's a bit of a shame for Reading. Mm. You know, I'm quietly pleased with my team. Then Reading turned it around and win 3-2, and it was top of the programme. And again, I got it from Teesside. Oh, we're only leading because we lost. You know?
I've always been fascinated as well by midweek match of the day, which is, you know, at least on a Saturday, you've got a bit of time. You've got 5-6 hours to put it together. But that one, it's KBS, isn't it, really?
It pretty is. Quick turnaround,
It is, and you have to cut your cloth accordingly. It's a bit less finessed. I mean, it's better than it used to be in the days when I did Sports Night. I've written about that, which was terrifying, because you were on linear editing, so it was literally like dubbing a C60 cassette to another C60 cassette. Yeah. Every bit of action had to be transferred. And somehow, if it went to extra time and penalties, and you run it, it actually on at 10 o'clock, because it wasn't 10 o'clock news then. Mm. At least now it's 10:40 with the regional news and everything. But yes, you're right. It's a far less finesse programme on a Wednesday. Although, to be honest, the technology's so good now, you could do a pretty good level of analysis, and it's, you know, and the expectation, the bar raises, and people expect it to be decent. I mean, in the old days, Sports Night, they made allowances if it was kind of falling off the air and chaotic. And
considering the quick turnaround, I remember one FA, I mean, especially the FA Cup games, in the, say, third and fourth round, we got all these matches, or even second round games.
I was like that. The third round match of the day is always a good match of the day.
But it's a very quick turnaround. You can probably count the sort of errors, you know, on the fingers of one hand, but old mate Sue Thirl, remember, famously, and an edit stayed in, didn't it, where she said, she used an expletive because they'd not had time to edit her audio.
That was incredibly unfair for her as well. Yeah. It was one of her first, I mean, she's doing roundups still to this day, so fortunately her career, and she's doing tennis commentary and everything else, so her career coped with it, but I do remember that. Because David Coleman had never sworn on the air, but was constantly swearing to his production team. And, you know, just before you'd start a race, you'd hear him swearing at people, and then he just stopped for 2 seconds and then say the Olympic 100 metres final. And he got away with that for
some
an entire
brilliant
career.
Stuff from Mexico.
Yes, you've probably heard that, Andy, haven't you? Yes, when you were around the BBC, there's a famous sort of Christmas tape of him losing it with a man who became head of sport, in fact, Jonathan Martin, who was directing him, and he was accused he couldn't direct traffic in, but with rather worse language than that.
The other thing I like, that Gary's inherited from Des,
the glasses
is the turn. When something important happens, there's a bit of breaking news. As soon as Des reached for the glass, you think, oh, blimey, what's happened?
Yes.
It was almost like Walter Cronkite, wasn't it?
Yes.
And Gary's got that now. He goes for the glasses and you think, oh, something's happened.
I think his eyes have gone a bit, to be fair to him. But
there's glass in the glasses.
He'd be the first to admit he got a lot from Des, which is the whole less is more thing. He doesn't give you an avalanche of statistics.
No. Yeah.
He leaves that to Motti or somebody. Whoever
he's
handing
a really
over to
fantastic
him.
Presenter. Now.
He is, yeah.
And you've kind of watched him get better and better.
I heard him on the radio when he first started, and to be frank, he wasn't great, but he's really become something special.
Well, I've likened it in the book to the Beatles. You've just got to be functional initially. You've got to be able to play your instrument. So you go from Please Please Me, and then he's probably at Revolver or Sergeant Pepper by now. Arguably, anyway. I'm glad you guys as pros think that too, but he has improved massively.
On a serious level, though, and I went back and watched this. You write about Hillsborough in the book, don't you? And it's, we obviously can't say too much, but it's incredible. On the night, how much Des, how much Motti, how much you kind of realised what really had gone on. If you actually watch that, it's difficult to talk about because of the case and everything.
Yes,
but,
exactly, got to be careful.
But it's fascinating that.
Yes, and it's how you cope in extremis. I mean, David Coleman in the Olympics in 72, which I actually dug out. We did a documentary in the centenary of the Olympics, and it was extraordinary. I mean, it was just, you know, he was live broadcasting from what was international news. I guess that's when you test it. I mean, nobody wants to be in those positions.
No.
As an editor, it's your absolute nightmare that you're in anything like that situation.
Of course.
Even the problem with the helicopter crash, I mean, they coped. But Gary again rose to that.
Gary was wonderful.
It was his own team.
It was fantastic.
And it was the day that Glenn Hoddle was seriously ill.
Yeah.
It was just a horrible,
all of it, the whole way he handled
horrible
it.
Day. But I was very proud of the way they did that. It was one of those where you thought, I really wouldn't want to be in the hot seat today, but you've just got to do it.
Yeah, because you've got the potential when you're broadcasting to absolutely be crass, to ruin your own career, to really mess it up, you know, especially in social media and the way life is now.
There's a lovely story in the book as well, Paul, about the Cup Final, West Ham-Liverpool Cup Final, and someone at the sort of programme scheduling department who said, oh, no, I think we're going to go to Doctor Who.
Absolutely.
We won't show the... you're going to have to... No trophy.
Yeah.
Get through the pens. Oh, you've got to be straight off a Doctor Who.
Well, it was initially at 90 minutes when Gerrard equalised, and it was, well, what does this mean? You know, it was... and I got the call. I had to hang up because we were trying to do the analysis between full time and extra time. So I thought, I'm dealing with this in a minute, because normally it's just a protocol, which is, you know, it's going to extra time, and then when it's in extra time, you discuss how long you're going to stay on. I'm sure it's the same with When you guys have an extra time commentary.
Yeah.
So that was the normal protocol. For some reason, the person at the other end just didn't seem to understand either penalty. And I thought, well, perhaps it's because it's gold and silver goal at this time. And there had been in international football, perhaps they don't understand that this is going to be 30 minutes. So yeah. I patiently explained that. And it was, well, okay. And of course, there's always penalties after that. What? And it actually wasn't the next programme on. It was a 7 o'clock slot, the launch of a new series of Doctor Who, which they obviously had been plugging away. But because of where we were going, then there was a Strictly programme or something in between. Yeah. It was going to be late, the 7 o'clock thing, and the guy just wasn't having it at all. And then when I explained penalties, well, how long does that take? This is ridiculous. I can't deal with that. And I said, well, it could be 17-16. You know, I went to see Middlesbrough lose 17-16 at Anfield in a penalty shooter. Or it could be 4-2 and it could be over. Well, that's just nonsense, isn't it? And so we got to this point. Obviously, there was no more scoring in extra time. We went to penalties. And he just said, you're going to have to come off. As soon as the winning penalty scored, you're coming off. I'm sick of this.
Really?
At this point, Gary, who'd been listening to all this, and my language had degenerated a little bit.
Yeah.
And I said, eventually said, I think you'll be sacked if you do that. Because we've been on doing the cup finals since the 30s. We've never missed a trophy presentation.
Yeah.
I don't think you should, really.
No.
Gary texted that Peter Fincham was then controller of BBC One, and suddenly, I've likened it in the book to Peter Capaldi sort of morphing into Jodie Whittaker.
Yeah.
His honeyed tones came down the phone. Please have as long as you like. And don't do interview anyway. How long's your closing sequence? So that was just a rare exit. It was normally better than that. That was just a particularly shambolic and a particularly bad day for it to happen, because you see it a lot. I mean, they went on the other channel with West Brom.
Well, I was going to talk about that.
You can't really argue with that.
Well, the problem was our old mate Andy Smart was taping. He does comedy,
that's a problem.
Comedy
yeah.
improv.
Yeah.
And he was taping, recording rather, BBC One. And then, of course, switched to BBC Two. And he'd avoided the result and everything.
Yeah.
Sat there about 1 o'clock in the morning, gets back full of adrenaline. And of course,
yeah, misses out on extra time because they've gone to BBC Two.
But on the other hand, the other game,
yeah,
they didn't, and everyone went mad because May had to go and do a speech outside Number 10 on.
And it was
BBC
that big.
Two.
Was it the big night she lost the vote or whatever
it was?
They got a bit of a hammering. I mean, yeah, you can't win. I think that's a fair point when people are recording it. But it's a bit like that on a Saturday night. People still avoid the results. You get in so much trouble. There's a bit of a tannoy at the end of another game, and it gives away a result, or you can see it on the scoreboard or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You get absolute dogs.
I'll tell you one thing, though. It is better watching. I never do it, but very, very occasionally, I've been out or I just haven't had it. Watching Match of the Day without knowing the results is actually quite good. It's quite fun, but it's difficult
to do. If you can get through the day.
Yeah. I've occasionally done it, too. And also, a lot of games are better at that length. If it's not your team and you're not that interested, 6 or 7 minutes is often about right.
Yeah. Finally, Paul, in the final chapter, what happens next? Did you ever envisage a time when it won't exist, when there won't be a Match of the Day? I mean, what could be the doomsday scenario that sees there not being a highlights package?
Well, the good thing at the moment is the Premier League have recognised the need for a terrestrial window. So they make a lot of money out of the live rights, a lot of money out of the overseas rights. They make a fair bit out of the terrestrial highlights, but it's minimal, it's a pretty small proportion. And they've always put it in the contract. So as long as they keep doing that, and I think BBC is the natural place for it, obviously the way it's funded. There are issues, clearly, but they've really realised they need to have it. And I think the Premier League, unlike, say, cricket or golf, where there's been a complete, people don't know who the figures are in those games anymore. I think the Premier League have realised, and it helps Sky. It doesn't hurt Sky or BT or you guys or anybody. Match of the Day is a good
window. The Sunday morning repeat for kids is a great idea and really important for kids in homes that don't have satellite.
Yeah, and once they got that, and also the fact it's now on iPlayer, those two things were sort of conceded in the contract. Again, the Premier League, where it was just purely you can only show it from 10 till midnight on a Saturday, they've expanded that and been flexible. And as long as they continue to do that, I would hope the BBC will keep doing it. I mean, I wouldn't have thought that in 92, but it's great that it's lasted this long and hopefully for years more to come. I was only ever the custodian of it, really. I just handed it on. It's the same. I'm not missed, really. But
I'm sure they wouldn't say that. But long may it continue. And best of luck with the book, Paul. Thanks very much for coming in.
Brilliant.
Paul Armstrong's book, Why Are We Always On Last? Running Match of the Day and Other Adventures in TV and Football. Published by Pitch and is available now in hardback. Thanks for coming in.
Lovely. Thanks, guys. Lovely to see you.